Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your show host, Randy Fine, and today is Free Advice Friday, which means that you can call in and ask me your questions. Or if you have something to share, pitch in, you know, if I'm talking about something and you want to share, you can call in and comment on that. So the number to call would be 424-220-1801. That's 424-220-1801. So, you know, I was thinking this morning before I started the show, and really this happens to me every time I do the Free Advice Friday show. I always have some anxiety, and I don't have that anxiety when I have guests on, and I'll tell you why. So I've said this before, but when I do these shows for you, I have no idea what I'm going to talk about. I put my faith and trust totally in the universe, spirit, whatever, what I believe in. And the words come to me, and they're always right. So I have to have a great amount of faith in order to be able to do that. Still, I am in a human body, living a human experience, and there are parts of us that want to control things and think that, you know, we know everything. And so I relinquish that every time I do this show for you, and I just wanted to let you know that. But I've never had a show where I didn't have something important to say. So I just wanted to preface that. And I also wanted to thank you for continuing to give me the opportunity to affirm what I have to hear, because when I speak to you, I reaffirm all the things that I need to remember and live by. It's very difficult when you have been victimized by narcissistic abuse, because we live with it for the rest of our life in some way, shape, or form. And things do creep up. Things do creep in. And I have to constantly remind myself about certain things. It's gotten so much easier over the years. So I want to assure you that when you do the work, life gets so much better. It's so much easier. And yes, you may have moments, but you have the tools to get you through those moments. and that's what I use. But I also want to talk to you a little bit about having faith in something. So if you've read any of my blog articles and you know anything about me, you'll know that I say I am not a religious person. I was raised with Judaism, but I didn't find what I needed in that. I never thought I really needed anything out of it, but I didn't find what I needed because the way it was presented to me was from the point of view of a narcissistic mother who had no gratitude for anything and no faith in anything, even though she was a very pious woman. Quite a dichotomy there. And yes, that confused me. And so for many years, I lived without faith in anything, thinking that life was under my control. But you know, there came a time where I realized that there were certain things I had no control over. And it was very hard for me to relinquish that control. It was very hard for me to let it go and just say, you know what, there's a bigger picture here. There's a force working to help me in my life. Not all of you will believe that. Some of you may disagree with me. But what I'm saying is we have to have a faith in something because there are times where we cannot work out these situations, and especially when we're dealing with narcissistic personality disorder abuse. It is very confusing. It is very disorienting. And there usually are no answers to what we ask. So I encourage you to find some sort of bigger picture, some meaning to your life that you can fall on, that you can reach to, either way, however you want to do it. Some do it through prayer. Some do it through affirmations. But it's different for each of us, and it has to be something that really matters to you. So I'm pointing out the fact that I do these shows completely blindly, completely, so that you understand that it's coming from another place. I don't know what that place is, but I'm grateful for it. So just wanted to let you know that. This is Thanksgiving month. We're going to be celebrating Thanksgiving in America in just a couple of weeks. And so this is the time for us to be grateful. Wow, when you're in crisis from narcissistic personality disorder abuse, it feels as if there is nothing to be grateful for at times. Because every time your hope gets lifted up, it gets dropped again. But my feeling, because I'm a bigger picture thinker, my feeling, there are certain people who are given this gift, and you heard me right, I said gift, in life. And the reason I call it a gift is because there is nothing, nothing in this life that will bring up all the issues you need to work on to live your very best life, to be your very best person, to have as much growth as you need to have in this life. There is nothing that will float all those things immediately up to the surface and make you look at them. And if you think about it, you'll realize everything you ever needed to work on has come up because of this abuse. It is true. It is difficult. It's a difficult life to have to navigate. And believe me, no one knows this better than I do. This has been a very difficult life for me to navigate. It is much easier now. But I get tired, and I know you all do too. So if we can find a certain amount of gratitude in what we've experienced and find the shining light in it, what we have the ability to become as a result of what we've experienced. The narcissist will live in their personal hell for the rest of their life. They will not grow, they will not change, they will not learn. But you can rise above that. You are not a narcissist. You can rise above that. And what you get on the other side is so amazingly beautiful that at some point, if you get through the process, at some point you will look back and say, wow, I am thankful for that experience, hard as it may be. I am thankful because look where I am. Look at the inner strength I've developed. Look at the amount of self-love and protection I have for myself. It is much easier to navigate through this world. Life is not an easy place to be. It is very difficult to navigate it when you are feeling disempowered and unloving towards yourself. So this is the goal. And everyone who works with me through counseling, this is where we head. And it's not something that you can easily grasp. It takes some reassurance, you know, some affirmation, encouragement, and validation, tons and tons of validation and support, to be able to get to the place where you can then take it and work with it. So that's kind of what I wanted to say today, you know, about gratitude. Listen, there are many things we have to be grateful for. Just think about a power outage or a storm, a hurricane, a tornado. When you lose all the things that you do that allow you to do what you do every day, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, I used to be able to flip a switch and the light went on. And now that doesn't happen. So think about all the things that you truly have to be grateful for and try to see this experience of this kind of abuse as something that will perpetually lead you to the best life ever. So as I said, this is a call-in show. The number to call is 424-220-1801, and we do have a caller, so I will bring this caller on. Good morning. Thank you for calling in. Did you have a question to ask me?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I have been unknowingly living and married to a narcissist for 6 years.
Okay.
So the revelation has just dawned upon me that he is a narcissist. And it's been 6 years of a lot of torment, chaos, destruction, lying, cheating, betrayal. And right now, I'm in the process of actually not contacting him at all, which I believe that he has pretty much decided that I discovered who he really is, and he has also decided not to contact me. So right now, I'm in the process of healing, and I would just like to not be able to actually care for him, which I do care for him, and I have feelings for him. And I realize now that he has never, ever cared for me, or he has never had feelings for me. And he actually married me so he could have access or to whatever I had worked for or achieved in life. So I'm just trying to find out how to recover and move forward and never, ever contact him again in life.
That's a really good question. And it's one I hear really quite often. What forms when you get into a romantic, well, relationship? I call it a hostage situation, because relationships actually take two people, and this doesn't constitute a relationship, because it's one person doing everything and the other person doing nothing. So to me, that's more of a hostage situation. But let's just call it a relationship, because that's the more common terminology. So when you first get into a relationship with these people, an addiction forms to them. And it is what they do in the honeymoon phase, the love bombing that they do in the very beginning, that creates this endorphin experience in you that is ultimately becomes an addiction to this person. And so what many people tell me, I wasn't married or dating a narcissist. I had this in childhood, so I've never experienced it in a relationship. But what everyone tells me is that even if this person beat the living out of them, if that person walked back in the door, they would hug and kiss them and welcome them, even though they know intellectually that they cannot be with this person, that this person might even physically kill them or maim them, they still can't get over the addiction to the person. So I want to ask you if you are feeling some of that.
Yes, I feel that he is dangerous, especially now that I refuse to tolerate his behavior. And I realize now is actually disorder, mental disorder that he has. And I'm sure that he has found another supplier right now, which he had already had contact with her. And now that I've decided not to contact him anymore, I'm sure that he has made his second supplier his primary supplier now. So I do feel like he's dangerous, and I just want to move forward. I've been stuck for 6 years, not progressing, just working, not having a life, not being happy, just miserable, you know, and it's been a roller coaster ride. And I'm just I don't want to do it anymore.
Okay. So are you feeling the feelings that it's difficult to walk away because there's a part of you that is holding on to the good times or the beginning? Because what happens is, you know, we have rational minds and they don't. So when somebody presents themselves a certain way, which is what happens in the love bombing part of the honeymoon phase. When somebody presents themselves as the most loving, perfect partner that we could ever want, and we go, hallelujah, we found him or her, when that changes, in our mind, we have a very hard time accepting the change. And so we think if we do this, they'll come back. If we do that, they'll come back. If we give in, if we don't cause problems, you know, whatever. And we can spend years and years trying this and that and the other to bring back the person we thought we had when he truly was an imposter. So are you experiencing some of that? Was it hard to let go of him because you had seen a good person and you were hoping he would come back?
No. I mean, after 6 years and realizing that he has cheated and lied and deceived me for 6 years, no, not at
all.
And
good.
My life has actually just stopped. You know, my friends, my family, I've been isolated, cut off from just enjoying myself, his controlling behavior, his sabotage of anything that I say that I'm getting ready to do or take part in. No, I just, you know.
Okay.
You know, the thing about
All right.
it is that he has cancer. he has stage 4 cancer, and he had a brain tumor where the cancer actually moved from his lungs to his brain, and he had the surgery, and he's going through the chemo. And even after all of that, which he's getting better, and everything, the cancer, the size is reducing, and everything is looking good for him, and he's looking great and healthy again. But he's now back to his self again, you
right.
know?
Because he needed you during that time, so he was nicer. Because he was relying on you, and he knew if he, you know, acted out the way he typically does, you would run away. So, you know, he got probably nicer during that time. And, yeah, oh, these people, these narcissists are so very difficult. So you want to move on and never experience him again. Are you living in the same area? You're not? Yes, you are?
Yes.
Were you legally married to this man?
I am. I still
am. Okay. Are you working towards divorce?
No, because my realization of who I am dealing with just happened this past weekend. And since I was awakened, I have not contacted this person at all. And he has not contacted me. I think that he sensed that the mask or disguise that he has been portraying has been lifted from my eyes, and he has decided to stay away.
Okay. So narcissists typically do this when they realize that you may be catching on to who they are. So if you stay away, they may stay away. And the reason they do that is to trick you into believing that they're going to stay away. And then at some point they come swooping in with some sob story, you know, my cancer's back, I got no place to be, or, you know, I love you, I've always loved you, I'm sorry, and they start hoovering you and trying to pull you back in. So it's not uncommon for them to stay away initially. But what happens with a narcissist is that when they take on a partner, or like I say, a hostage, a victim, they believe they own that person for life. You are property. You are not a person. You are property. And when you leave them, you are stealing their property, and they will never let you live it down. So their entire life after that, even if they have supply elsewhere, their entire life becomes about being vindictive towards you to punish you for stealing their property. You took away the supply. You took away his lifeblood. Even though he finds it elsewhere, you were his. He owned you. So he will be back in some way, shape, or form. Do you have children with this man?
No, I do not.
Okay. Okay. And that makes it so much easier because you can get away. So what's going to happen is he's going to start tugging at your heartstrings through texts, emails, phone calls. If you haven't already blocked all these things, block them. Because
I have.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Because it's you can't afford at this point in your healing to see any of these things. It will confuse you. Even though you know intellectually, it will confuse you. It just will, because of the programming that's been put in there. So that's a very, very good thing. And if you happen to drive by him, car, or pass him on the street, do not look at him.
Okay.
Give him nothing, absolutely nothing. No emotion, no attention, no nothing. And that's the best way to start navigating this process. And the other thing is, whatever you have of his that may be sentimental, if anything, get rid of it. Because in order to heal from this kind of abuse, you cannot have any triggers around you. You've got to live in this bubble of solitude for about 6 months where you don't have triggers. And that's why I'm saying avoid any contact with him at all. That will give you the space to heal. And I'm here to help you through counseling. If you are having a tough time, you can always come to me. Sometimes it only takes one session, and I only charge $60 an hour. I'm pretty cheap. But, you know, if you need a little bit of help or a cushion or some support or an answer, you can always come to me, okay? So we have another caller. I really hope that that was helpful to you.
Yes, very. Thank you
okay.
so much.
Great. You're welcome. Keep listening.
Okay.
Trying to put this back on hold. Come on, go back on hold.
Okay. Hi.
Hello. So, hi, good morning. Do you have a question or a comment for me today? Or for the listeners? Are you there? This is area code 662. Are you there?
I just talked with you. 662?
Oh, the other person. Okay. There was someone else. Okay. Okay. I got you. Sorry.
Okay.
Hello.
Okay. This is area code 201. I'm so sorry. I have the switchboard.
Okay.
I got confused.
Thank you.
Hi.
Thank you for calling. That was one of my sister friends on the line anyway, so I just wanted to call in, and I definitely want to listen to your archive, because I'm dealing with a lot of people that have narcissistic personality issues, and it's very draining. And I think my biggest concern, you know, if you go tit for tat with these people, is I do not want to become like them. So I'm resisting the urge to pick up on some of their tendencies, because it's draining psychologically, emotionally, and physically draining to have to deal with people that way. So I'm just really trying to understand, you know, how to navigate through it if you have to be in contact with people who have this disorder and who sees no wrong in what they do and how they do it. What's the best way to protect me?
Good question. Really good question. And it is a question that's multi-layered. And the first thing I would do is recommend, if you don't have a copy of my book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, pick up a copy, because I go through every single step of this and make it so that you totally understand. And then I give you all the examples of how to work through all the different things, like boundaries and like how to have limited contact, how to have no contact, what to do if it's your parents, what to do if it's your friends, what to do if it's your coworkers. I go through every kind of relationship in there and walk you through it to give you some help and support. So that would be a really good thing for you to have. And to all my listeners, I'm not pushing my book because I'm trying to make money, because I make very little on it. But I wrote it for you because it has everything in there you could ever want to know. So anyway, sometimes, so the first thing I was going to say before you said, how can I stay in these relationships and keep going forward? What I was going to say before that is, once you identify as someone as a narcissist, there's only one thing to do, and that is run. Because it is virtually impossible to continue a relationship with someone who does not contribute as a partner or a friend or whatever. And the reason you feel so drained is because every one of these relationships, no matter the nature, is one-sided. You're doing everything. But let me assure you that you will not become a narcissist. And the reason I say that is because this is a personality disorder that forms in childhood. this is a something that, and I explain this in detail in the book, but this person has had this personality for many, many years and will have it until the day he or she dies. What happens to us that makes us think, because so many people who have been affected by this kind of abuse think, they say to me, I think I'm turning into a narcissist. So that's impossible, because if you are looking inside, if you have any kind of self-awareness and realization that you are not a perfect person, then you are not a narcissist. But what happens is you are being goaded into reactions that make you look like the narcissist. And then they can then accuse you of being what they are.
So it's like a mirror.
This is their tactic. So, yes, because the confusion is that they tell you you didn't see what you saw, you didn't hear what you heard. And so they will try to make you think that you're the crazy one. And in order to do that, they provoke you and prod you until you can't stand it anymore and you begin going berserk, you know, acting out to whatever they said, reacting, whatever. And then they say, look, see, I'm not the crazy one, you are. It is very, very deliberate.
Yes,
so,
I grew up with two siblings that are like that. And I mean, and to be honest with you, I really didn't know just how, or I mean, I didn't know the extreme until my mother passed. Like, that was the earth-shattering event.
Okay.
And then it showed me exactly who they are. And I deal with them at a distance. I have to, only because I'm involved in some legalities with them with the estate.
Okay.
But then I go to work, and I'm seeing same type of people. And I do anything to stay away from them. But, you know, I have to sometimes coexist or co-mingle with them. And I'm very empathic. So, I mean, sometimes the only way that I could buffer my feelings and my emotions, right, is either to go within or retreat. And then I don't feel good about that, because why should I have to? Because you have these issues that you're just spilling out on everyone with no remorse, nothing. And so then I beat myself up because to be other than myself, just to be in their presence.
And how stressful is that for you? It's terribly stressful, right?
Extremely, extremely. I mean, it goes to my gut. So, I mean, it throws everything off for me. So I'm trying to learn how to deal with it without pulling that in, that energy in, that negativity in, that, you know, that just everything that they do, and they see no wrong in it. However, these same individuals could turn around and be like the perfect person to everyone else. But to people close to them, oh, my God, unbelievable.
It's tragic when this happens in the workplace because, listen, economy is, it's bad. We all need jobs. We all need to work. We need our income. And when we have a good job and then this happens, it's a real slap in the face because we need the income. We may even like the job or like what we're doing, and we feel stuck in these situations.
Yes.
And workplace narcissism is widespread. It's rampant,
rampant
in the corporate world, rampant. So,
in the institution, in the public sector, it spilled over from corporate, you know, like from the 80s and, you know, all the downsizing and restructuring. It spilled over from corporate into the public sector. Like, it's bad in the public sector.
Yes.
Not
it's
just
very,
corporate
I
anymore.
Say it's epidemic. It's epidemic worldwide. It is. So, okay. So, because I counsel people from all over the world, Africa,
uh-huh.
New Zealand, Australia, I mean, all over the place. So this is not something that's just happening here. It's happening worldwide. I don't know why. I haven't figured that out yet.
So what do you think is triggering it? You think it's the economy? You think it's fear?
No, this is something that's gone through generations. It has been transferred energetically, genetically, and through behavior. It's been transferred through the generations. Now, as someone, and if you tell me that your sisters have what you think is narcissistic personality disorder, then my assumption is that you had a difficult childhood.
Absolutely, with her.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, because that is what one of the, you know, either when you go through these difficult childhoods, you either become super empathic, sensitive, and a pleaser, or you become a narcissist. And once you become a narcissist,
that's what I'm saying. That tendency to become one is for protection purposes, and I don't want to become a narcissist because I honestly see what they do and the effects of their actions. But
of course,
I'm very empathetic.
Yes,
very,
exactly.
And
right. Energetically,
that's where the narcissist threw me off, because I'm just now beginning to learn, like even just to understand my chakra systems. I'm just now beginning to learn, you know, why I was feeling the way that I feel, because I didn't know what it was. It wasn't until I had to deal with it firsthand, full force, and recognize, oh my God, this is it.
So all of us who have had narcissistic abuse in childhood, we are all empathic, all of us, which makes this so much harder, because we are so sensitive to energy and everything around us. We pick up on everything. We're sponges. So, and the reason that happens, and there's an entire chapter in the book about this, I explain this. The reason that happens is because as a child, your awareness had to be so heightened to the point where you could feel when something was about to change in your environment. When your mother was about to go off, when your father was about to go off, your sister, your brother, whatever, you were always on guard waiting for that to happen. And so energetically, you became very sensitive to the environment around you. And you take that with you into adulthood. And learning to deal with that. Actually, I have a page on Facebook. If you're on Facebook, it's called Empath Society. I suggest you go on there and take a look at what I put up. There are over 3,000 people on there. This is a very common issue. But it also makes us feel strange. It makes us feel like we don't fit in. But I'm telling you, there are so many of us out there, me included. So I get it. So
you want to know the truth? You want to know the truth? I'm at the point where I really don't want to fit in. Like I'll tell people, you know, averages, you know, you got to be above average. The average is so low. There's a law of average in mathematics, right? I don't want to be that. But at the same time, I don't want to be aloof, you know, because I don't want cockiness to set in. But at the same time, just to protect my aura, my emotions, because I'm literally just coming back from the turmoil and the hurt and the pain. And I got it at the hands of the people that I care about, because they don't realize just what they do. And one of them, I think she does, but she just don't know how to stop. But, I mean, there's a cause and effect.
Anyone who has this personality disorder, not only do they know what they do, they don't care that they're hurting anybody. You know, so it would be interesting to hear from you if and when you get the book and read it, because so much of this will be explained to you, and you will understand every dynamic of what's going on from their mind and yours. So, but
is your book in Barnes and Noble or
Amazon? Just go to Amazon or Barnes and Noble online. And it's also an ebook too. Close Encounters of the Worst Kind. You won't be sorry, trust me.
Okay. No. I appreciate this so much. I really, really do.
So there's one more thing I wanted to say, because we're coming to a close here. But I guess the reason I brought up this sensitivity from childhood is the fact that when you are in an environment with other people, even if they're negative people, you are going to be hypersensitive to those things. And so that's what I call triggers. It's going to be very difficult for you, with your nature, your empathic nature, to remain around these people. But there are two things I can recommend you try, see if they help. You mentioned your aura. So as empaths, we have these big, wide auras. We're so open, right? So when you're around these people, pull your aura in to about 6 inches to your body all around. Visualize you pulling that aura in so that no one can infiltrate that energy. Okay, that's one thing you can do. You don't want to keep it like that, because that open energy is a beautiful thing, and eventually you will see how that will benefit you. But around these people, pull it in. The other thing is that you can visualize yourself in the center of a house of mirrors all the way around you, and you can see out through the mirrors, but nobody on the outside can see in. And all their negativity reflects back to them. So that's another visualization. And there's one more thing that somebody told me that they do. They keep this little teeny mirror in their bra facing out wherever they go.
Wow. I'm going to have to try that. Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes, I'm going to have to try that, because I now even understand the power of mirrors of all of this. Really.
Yeah.
And like I said, I work in a toxic environment. I am still dealing with family members who are extremely toxic, but they're not physically around me, but they're energetic. I guess our energetic cords have not been completely severed, because there's still some business that I have to handle.
Yes,
and,
I recently went through a cord cutting procedure with a psychic, and I found cords all over me from certain people. Some had me at my throat, some had me at my gut. It was amazing. So yes, the cords stay energetically attached. I'm going to have to end the show, but I want to say,
thank you
if you're
so
having
much.
Any difficulty, if you're having any difficulty, please reach out for at least one session of counseling, because there's so much I can tell you that I can't explain here. But start with a book, and that goes for all of you. So I'm going to close the show. I thank both of my callers so much for calling in, because you have made the show. And others can
thank
hear
you.
What you have to see. So keep on listening. I'm going to close the show. And I'll be back. Let's see. So it'll be December. Where is that? Okay. So I'll be doing the show again on December 14th, Friday, December 14th, at 11 a.m. Eastern. So anyone who's listening and wants to call in then, you can also email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com ahead of time, and I can answer your questions on the air. So, thank you again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. I am here for you. Please reach out. I hope you have a wonderful day, and may joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.